So let's get to our guest, Peter Cheer, head of macro strategy at Academy Securities. Peter, the big question, I suppose, is what the BOJ did the beginning of the end to ultra-loose monetary policy? But in the shorter term, I'm curious whether or not investors will simply have to add yen to hedge their bets and, in fact, actually make bets on what comes next.
Yeah, I think it was a really interesting move. I like the surprise factor. It took the market by surprise, and I think that's actually going to be more powerful than telegraphing so far in advance. So I like what they did. I agree with you. I think people are going to have to buy some yen. I think you're also going to see Japanese look at selling treasuries and some other things as they can start getting a real yield in their own currency without having to go through FX hedges, et cetera. So I think we're going to see, you know, yields push up a little bit on the back of this. Not dramatically in the U.S., but it's a really interesting start to what Japan's doing.
It is rather interesting. And, you know, the thing is, it has global implications, does it not?
Yes. So, you know, I think when you look, Japanese have been the largest buyers of foreign-denominated bonds in the world. So will they start selling those foreign-denominated bonds? Because they often have to jump through hoops trying to hedge the FX risk, et cetera, when they want to buy that and keep it in their own currency. So now all of a sudden you can start getting 40, 50 bips on your own tenure. I think some of that incentive goes away. So I think it's going to be problematic for the U.S. in particular, where we've relied so heavily on foreign buyers. We're going to have to make sure that we have domestic buyers.
I'm curious, though, you know, you've got this lasso, which is the yield curve control. And okay, we move from 25 basis points to 50. It's a step in that direction. But I'm curious what you think. If we didn't have yield curve control, where would those yields be on the 10-year?
That's such an interesting question. I guess probably 1.25%, 1.5%. I think they're going to still be much lower than the rest of the world because Japan's really not experiencing the inflation. They're not experiencing the growth. So I don't think you would catch up to even German rates. So I think it would go higher. But that cap certainly makes them, it's held them in. But I don't think it's super, super dramatic given the state of inflation in Japan versus the state of inflation in the rest of the world.
Peter, just, you know, I want to keep on looking at what's happening with regards to this, because, I mean, we've got this probably an outflow from treasuries, given what happened on the JGB market, Japanese government bond market. You know, it's already a market suffering, I'm talking about the treasury one, from liquidity issues, which have been also simultaneously been perhaps affected by quantitative tightening. What does that all really add up to?
To me, it's adding up to a policy mistake in the U.S., where I think they're looking very much at in the rearview mirror at the data. If you take a look, the past 2 months, the inflation data, even on CPI, has been pretty good. It's been overstated by pretty much erroneous housing inputs, and the Cleveland Fed actually just published something on that today. So I think the Fed is responding to last year's mistakes and older data, and I think we're pushing too far, and I think that's setting the U.S. economy up for a very negative, you know, bad recession early this year, which is why we're so inverted.
Well, it depends on how you define policy mistake, because there will be those who will take even recession as necessary to beating inflation, and they will see it as a victory. But as you say, plenty will say that if they don't engineer a soft landing, then it's a mistake.
Yes, and I think we're not only going to get a small recession, I think we're going to get a fairly deep recession. And when I keep thinking about what drove inflation, if you go back to 2021, when a lot of us were saying the Fed had to put the brakes on, we had a lot of stimulus. We had fiscal stimulus coming from the government directly to people, to companies. We also had, to me, and I think this is the biggest shift, is the amount of wealth that was created in a very short period of time in these disruptive companies. So the employers are rich, the companies were cash rich, the investors were cash rich, the private equity firms did so well. There was all this money sloshing around, and a lot was spent on the economy because it was growth, growth, growth at all costs, and it looked like it was going to go on forever. And I think that really drove inflation in a lot of products, semiconductors, for example, and I think that's all gone, and that's why the Fed is overreacting. That was a, quote-unquote, transitory type thing that is now gone.
Well, absolutely. It's the end of free money, and that's something that we've gotten used to for the last, 12, 13 years. And this has actually consequences well beyond not just, of course, the asset price side of things, but also how people look at markets and whether they're now looking actually where they can make yield rather than capital appreciation.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people looking even at bonds as capital appreciation. You could buy bonds at 60 cents on the dollar. Okay, you can get some upside from there if yields move. And I just think that the process of QE really forces everyone out the risk spectrum all the way into those risky assets. And I think as we go through quantitative tightening, it allows everyone every day almost to make that decision. I can take less risk for similar returns. I am going to do that. So all of a sudden, you're having all these conversations. Should I be in 2 years? Should I be in money market funds? And I think you're seeing a much better portfolio diversification, and it's going to take time to play out. But people actually have that ability to pick and choose where they want to be on the yield curve, where they want to make income. And they'll still take equity risk, but it doesn't all have to come from equity returns right now.
You probably heard me mention Nike shares are up 12% in after hours, and FedEx actually trading up about 3.75%. These earnings will definitely satisfy some people. What are you expecting from this next round of earnings?
So I think we are seeing oil prices lower, and I think that's going to help some of these companies. It's probably good that we're seeing some of the dollar weakness, so that might have chance to translate into next quarter. And I think you're going to see, it reminds me a lot of what was going on in the U.S. in 2015-16, when energy was horribly disappointing and everything else was okay for a while. I think you're going to see tech disappointing, but you're going to see autos do reasonably well. You're going to see travel and leisure do very well. So it's going to be, you know, a little bit hard to see where this recession is coming through, but I think FANG, which was such a big leader, is rolling over, and I think that's going to continue. That's going to show up evidence in the earnings. And what I'm really watching for is the service providers, how they do. So there's a couple public accounting firms. There's some public consulting firms. I think that's going to be the area that companies cut back on, so I'm really looking for earnings pressure there to confirm whether we are headed for a deeper recession than people think.
So if the Fed stopped moving on rates now, would we be fine?
I do not think so. I think that ship has sailed. I think they've set enough things in motion that it's triggering. And if you go back historically, we've often talked, right, it's 6 to 12 months for hikes to take effect. I think maybe it's 3 to 6 months, but you're still not even feeling some of the consequences of these prior effects. You're seeing losses in the credit markets at some of the big banks where you had deals like Citrix, the Twitter bond deal have caused some losses. So I think you're going to see credit tightening.
Yep.
So all the things that we're factoring into expansion are changing, and that just takes time, and I think the Fed's gone too far. They should have paused and waited.
Real quickly, sounds like you like Japan here.
I do. I think Japan is going to be a really good growth story. The inflation's low. They've got a, you know, good economic base. I like now what they're doing, loosening up monetary policy a little bit. But this particularly comes from, spend a lot of time on the geopolitical. Japan is really interesting in Asia because of their strength.
Okay. Yeah, we expanded our segments here so we could have more time with our guests, but we need even more time with you, Peter. Have to be next time. Peter Cheer from Academy Securities.